All right. Good morning. I'll call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, January 24th, 2017, and ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you again and good morning. First item, as always, is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to comment on anything that's on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so, come on up to the microphone. And seeing no one moving, we'll move on. Next item is presentation on Project Iowa, but JAM Florida has asked that we postpone that for a week. So we will do that and expect to see JAM to talk to us about Project Iowa next week. So next item is Animal Control Quarterly Report. Sue McCaskey and guest.
And guest. Good
morning, Sue. What'd you bring?
Good morning.
Brought you a cat.
Got cats. I am a cat.
You need
cat.
This one, though.
Well, I'm losing one right now, but that's a conversation for another time.
So, most of you here are sicker, but I'll just get her out. She's a little 3-month-old Siamese mix that's at the shelter. She's very friendly and sweet. She comes from a litter of 7. So, anyway, she's one of our adoptables, and I thought, well, I would bring her in so everybody could see the nice animals that we do get in and encourage them to go to a shelter when they want an animal instead of a pet store, because we are full of wonderful animals. So anyway, she's just going to sit here with me while I give you some information.
Do you have a name?
Well, yes. Right now she's kitten number 7. Because
not a lot of thought there, Sue.
No. Well, the problem is we name them if we put them in like the newspaper or someplace like that.
It's all marketing. It's how you market.
Yeah.
My daughter thanks you. I'm not so happy.
But anyway, we usually let the owners pick the name. We don't want to, you know, cats usually don't pay attention to you anyway when it comes to their names. But so right now she's just kitten number 7. But I think she likes that. Yes, she is looking right at you, Marty. So
great.
So anyway, well, to continue, the first thing is the numbers. And get my sheet out here. Okay, the numbers. So we're currently housing 138 animals at the shelter. Our adoptions for the last 3 months have only been 104, but that's very typical around Christmas and Thanksgiving. Nobody wants to take on a new pet during the holidays for many reasons. They're going to be gone. They have gifts to buy, whatever. So that's not an unusual amount, though that will go up. Our calls for assistance were 3,079. And Loris and Marty, you're kind of new. I was just going to kind of maybe do a square. We're starting at square one meeting today to kind of just give you guys an idea what's going on with where we're at and everything. So calls for assistance include people needing assistance by phone, animal pickups, neglect and cruelty calls, etc. Our volunteer hours were 130. Again, that's normal for this time of year because the students from Iowa State, many of whom are volunteers that come over, go home for the holidays, so we don't have the volunteer hours we normally do, but that's already going up because we've had several of them return. Our adoption rate of all animals in the shelter is 99%. That is every animal that comes in. That's not just what we deem as adoptable. We have put nothing to sleep in the last 3 months, so very proud of that. So what we do, and this is going to just kind of be a long, boring list, but I thought just to give you an idea of how our normal day is out there. Before we can open each day at 11 o'clock, the following things need to be done. This isn't everything, but this is just gives you an idea. The dogs are walked and fed, watered. Meds and vax are given. Floors are sanitized, squeegeed, and dried out. Phone messages responded to and taken action on. If emergency, we would leave right away. Getting laundry started, begin cats, all cages are scrubbed and sanitized, vaccinations or meds if needed, litter boxes changed out, food and water given, new papers put down, refill supplies, scrub all the floors, wash and scrub all the food dishes and litter pans. Sometimes there's over 80 litter pans alone. Keep laundry going and folded, go on animal control calls, feed rabbits, all the other animals that we have in the shelter, clean the public bathroom, scrub down the medical counter, And this happens before 11 o'clock in the morning. So everybody out there, first thing in the morning, it's really, really busy. But I have a very, very good staff, and everybody works together well, and so it makes it much, much easier. I think it's, you know, it's funny because it seems like a lot, and it is, but when you're working with people that you can get along with and you know, have a relationship with, it's a good working relationship, it makes all the difference in the world. And then we are on call 24/7, and that's even on holidays. And so every shelter employee works holidays, and every weekend at least one shelter employee works each day. Obviously, we have, when you have that many animals, you have to be going in. And then this doesn't count like phone calls, adoptions, helping public visitors, picking up donations, going to the vet, updating Pet Finder, Facebook, taking pictures, temperament testing, you know, volunteers, school groups. So we have a lot going on, and it's we're very thankful because we have a very good support from the county, and not just the county as an entity, but the people that live in this county. So we're very, very thankful that the support keeps our adoptions rates high, and that this makes our job so much easier. When I first started working at the shelter, our adoption rate was not high at all, and there were a lot of animals being euthanized because they were boarding them at Kalen Kennels at first, and then the shelter, the county decided to lease a building on Airport Road, and that's a whole nother story. But you know, we got to the point where the euthanizing of animals was just something that was happening all the time. It didn't matter if they were good animals or bad animals or what they were, it was just done. And so I remember Fred Matteson, a previous board member, telling me, you know, this is it when you get the job. You know, you've got to make it better. You've got to bring it up. It's got to work, or else we're not going to have animal control. And that just horrified me. So we've gone up to this place, and we're very grateful for all the support we have. Mild winter in comparison, so far so good. In this quarter, we have had horses and goats in. We got a three-legged female goat in that was very, very cute. She had been living in the timber for a while. Nobody kind of claimed her. And then on a Sunday morning, the neighbor or the person that lived by the timber, he was fine with her coming up to get a drink or whatever. But then she made the epic mistake of pooping on his porch, and that did it. That goat had to go. And now, so got the goat in, got it adopted. We've had horses in. Lately, we've seen more horses than normal. I think it's going to be a trend.
Why is that?
Well, first of all, there's no market for them, really, unless you're buying a very expensive animal. The market for the horses, just there's no market for them. And people don't, the way I look at it, people don't want to have that responsibility of knowing that they took it to a sale barn where they don't know what's going to happen to it. And, you know, we've had horses come from, like, Marshall County, run over the line. They got claimed, but, you know, that's a cute story. The lady was in her looking out her kitchen window, and she just gotten these two horses, and she was doing dishes, and the two horses just ran by her kitchen window. And she said, well, I thought they'd come back. Nope. So they went all the way into Story County, and we picked them up. And for a while, she didn't know. She just was waiting for them to come back. And then finally, her friend said, you better call around. Somebody probably has them. So they went back to her. But we are getting a lot of livestock-type stuff in. So I think it's going to continue to be a trend like that.
Do you think they're abandoned or that they can't have them anymore because of the increased costs?
I think it's the cost. You know, I do think that. Hay prices kind of fluctuate a little bit. But, you know, I think it's that. I think people's living situations, they seem to be more, like, maybe not as stable anymore. You know, they'll move into a rental, and they want a farm animal out in the country, and then all of a sudden they can't stay there. They have to move, and then what do you do with it, you know? I think there's a lot of circumstances kind of like that. But as long as they end up with us and we can find them homes and get them back to the owners, that's what matters. And then the cold snaps, obviously everybody remembers those last couple weeks. And we went out on several calls for welfare checks. We got several, several calls from people that were concerned about livestock and different animals in the county. And one almost resulted in confiscation of all the animals. They were dogs and horses, but we were able to work it out and able to you know, tell this person what they needed to do to be in compliance and work with them. And we just check on them now, and everything's fine. So, you know.
You do follow up when you have.
Oh, we definitely follow up.
So you just do a random drive-by and just.
Yep.
Yeah, well, good.
Yep.
That's good on you guys.
Yep. No, we always do that. And then this winter's also been different than most. Usually the animals kind of quit running this time of year. They kind of hunker down. But with the kind of different weather that we've had a lot more, like, cats coming in, a lot more calls on animals moving like wildlife, you know. Every time you see a raccoon out in your yard in the day, it doesn't mean it's rabid. It just means it probably, you know, who knows what happened. But that is happening a lot more this winter, I think. I don't know if you guys have gotten any calls on it, but we have a lot of people saying that. So, and then we also use this time of year to fix our traps. We fix our own traps. We fix our own kennels. We do all that ourselves to keep the cost down. And so wintertime is kind of when it's like catch-up time for us. So, and that's what we're able to do right now, is catch up on a lot of this stuff that come spring we won't be able to do or have time to do probably. The animals and their very Merry Christmas. Well, I don't even know where to start with this, because we had an overwhelming amount of people who donated to the shelter during this Christmas period. We had we went to elementary classrooms where we brought a truckload of stuff, of supplies, back to the shelter. We had businesses and churches and the ISU Shraw Club, which is students helping rescue animals, and families and other people that came in, and we got so much stuff that we needed. And again, you know, I like to be a little bit frugal with the county money, so I'm always happy to see these cases of bleach walk in the door and cases of stuff that people have donated to us. So this helps us a lot. And also we need to, you know, I always like to remember that Sam's Club, Target, Petco, Boone Vet Hospital, and Fairway Stores, they support us a lot. And, you know, that's very important too. We have a very good relationship with them. And consequently, I think Marty knows this, but when I go to Target to pick up, they'll call and say, "We have a load of stuff for you," and usually it's on a Monday and a Friday. When we get over there to pick up, they also, anything that the Boys and Girls Club in Ames, or anything that, you know, isn't needed over there for food at first, that they're going to throw away, they give to me, and I bring it back. And there's boxes of produce and bread and cereal and all this kind of stuff. And then it's slick, because I just, the same day the United Methodist Church picks it up and takes it. And so it's just kind of a little extra thing, but it's very much appreciated.
Not something you necessarily associate with an animal shelter, but you have been quite the pass-through for programming here in Nevada in that sense. I don't think your story's out there that well.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like, I don't want anything thrown away, and I'm not a hoarder. But
what's that, Rick?
Although Rick kind of thinks I am, but I don't like anything thrown away. I just, it's like, if they're going to throw that food away and I know there's a need for it and we're coming back this way anyway, and all we have to do is put it inside our back door and they're going to come and get it, why not? You know, this is just a little something extra. And they also give us stuff like deodorant and shampoo and stuff, and so I give that to the Nevada High School and everything. So it all gets used, and you know, just make sure everybody hopefully has what they need. So that's something that we do. Animals come first, but, you know, it's always kind of nice to help people. And so, thanking those businesses for their support really helps us out a lot. And at some point I would maybe like to recognize them at a board meeting, because there's a lot of things that they really do. Fairway last year donated two trailer, stock trailer, 4 pallets of cat food. Well, that was a wonderful thing, and we go through a lot of cat food and a lot of cat litter, so that's just an example. Plans for the future. Well, we didn't have our spay and neuter clinic that was planned on last November, because we were trying to schedule everybody, and that's a busy time of year. And, you know, people suggested we wait until after the first of the year, when everything kind of dies down a little bit. So we'll be having one of those. It'll be open to residents of Story County. And at first it'll be open to, because we're going to have several, it'll be open to people who live in the country that have strays that they would like to keep, but they, you know, they don't want to spend a lot of money on getting them fixed, so we're going to open that to them. And then the people who live in the trailer parks out in the county, like the Maxwell Trailer Court, and places like that where we see more of a population of cats, so we can kind of hopefully keep that down. We're going to do a rabies vaccination clinic also. I don't think a lot of people realize that rabies is in Story County. It's always been. It will continue to be. And, you know, we are fortunate that we have a vet school so close, because when we're suspicious, we always take everything over there. In fact, we had a bat, I think I told you this before, at our own shelter that was laying dead on the ground, and we took it over to Iowa State and had it tested, and it was positive. So we're very proactive about that, and we encourage people when we take bite reports and everything. So we always encourage the whole rabies follow through, because we want to make sure that we're doing everything like we should. And both of these programs, the rabies and the spay and neuter clinics, will be done at reduced rates. And that's because we have a couple veterinarians that are willing to come in, give of their time, get the vaccinations for free for us. And so it'll hopefully be a very successful thing, and we'll do 2-3 of them at least this year. We're also currently collecting items for our garage sale. We want to get that done before any sort of shelter updates are done. So we've got quite a bit of stuff out there. We'll be putting that on our Facebook page, and we'll be putting it out there so people know we're having it. And it's not going to be like the garage sales in the past where we made $3,000 or $4,000, but you know, it's going to enable us to kind of clear stuff out, and people who have stuff in their closets or whatever that need to get rid of stuff, bring it to us, and it just all goes back into our Friends of the Animals account, and just really helps to keep that fund going for above and beyond costs. Other than that, I don't have anything else. Winters are slow time, so it's slow, but it's fast. It's kind of weird that way. But if anybody has any questions or anything.
Questions for Sue?
No, I've had an opportunity to follow her program around. I thank you. We are fortunate to have somebody that's vested on a personal basis as well as a professional basis running a department for this county.
I agree.
Yes, I don't think there's a county that does animal control quite like Story County. And I think it means that we put probably a little more resources in, but we have high expectations and we're getting high results. That's a good combination.
You often see Sue referenced on some of the rescue sites, mm-hmm. helping, getting to take. So thank you.
Thanks, Sue.
Thank you.
Next item is consideration of minutes from the 17th.
Move to approve.
I never got any.
Okay. Well, then let's hold them until you have time to review them.
Retract my motion.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah. So, so in the future, just make an effort to see if we can get through these so that we can get them approved, and we'll go from there.
Right.
But we'll hold the 17th for next week.
They weren't on the download.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Let's make sure we'll hold for next week. All right, personnel actions as listed.
I'll move that we approve the personnel actions.
Second.
Motion and second. Any discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions pass. Consideration of claims.
I would move consideration of claims as presented.
I'll second. I do have a question on one, but I'm trying to track it down right now. The first couple of people I've talked to didn't know what it was. It's for $3,900 to McFarland Clinic, and the description says something about clerical. So we're just trying to get clarification, but I will second. And
okay. Mm-hmm. Motion is second. That notation that we're tracking down the $3,900 payment to McFarland. Any other conversation?
None.
Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Claims pass. Consent agenda as listed, board?
I move that we approve the consent agenda as listed.
I would second that.
Motion is second. Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes. No public hearing items today. Additional items. Discussion and consideration of asset recommendations and Story County's funding therein. Deb Shildroff. Hi, Deb.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Good. I'm trying to get this up here for the benefit of the audience. Get it a little larger. As large as we can. You all were in attendance to the asset joint funders meeting last Thursday, where we talked about the asset process and the recommendations. The recommendations before you are from the volunteers, and we did have some general basic dollars that were moved from the education panel to the health panel to help out the dental clinic request. I think overall it's a good set of recommendations, and I'd be happy to answer any questions or take any comments on what those recommendations look like. The volunteers did also recommend with regards to the dental clinic that those funds be sequestered, which for us means I wouldn't send out a contract to MICA until we have a sit down with them with regards to the financial stability of the dental clinic and what the sustainable plan is like as they move into fiscal year 18. And keep in mind, MICA is on the federal fiscal year, so it is a little bit different than our fiscal year. And during their hearing, Arlene McAtee, the executive director, did say that she planned on the clinic being in a stable condition for this fiscal, for the their federal fiscal year that ends in September, but wasn't sure starting next October what that may look like. And part of that is their trepidation with changes in Medicaid, and rightfully so. I think that's a concern of many of the agencies and clients that are involved in the Medicaid program. But we do have a total of 10 agencies in the asset process who are Medicaid providers, we continue having conversations and monitoring what that may do for those providers and their services. So, any questions or comments?
I have one talking about MICA, but going to the food pantry assistance, and I noticed that wasn't funded at the full ask. And I just, can you give me any insight into why with the food pantries in the county appearing to be getting some almost record demand and use, why they weren't able to come closer to a full funding on that?
Food pantries. So across all funders, they were funded at 85% of their requests for fiscal year 18. And what we did there was if the county, and this is the beauty of asset, if one funder is not able to fully meet the request of a particular service, another funder who is asked to fund that service may pick that up. And so that's what we did in terms of the food pantry. If it was something the county couldn't fully fund, United Way or the city may have picked that up.
Right, but let's also underscore now, what was approved is a 20% increase over what they got last year.
Right.
So they
right.
didn't get everything they asked for this year, but they got a 20% increase over what they got last year.
Right.
I understand that. They still yep. were, that request was funded at 85 compared to, you know, a lot of people who did ask for a much smaller increase. It's got 99 or 100%, 98%. So I was wondering if there was any thought, discussion, related to, did they think the 20% increase in ask was too much?
It's significant.
The ask was about what was almost 45% increase. They ended up getting 20% of right. the.
Just wondering about the disconnect. I see it as a disconnect from the standpoint about food pantries are talking about the increased need and the increased need. So I wondered if there was any discussion just about that, or that's the best the fun that the volunteers felt they could do given the budget and other asks.
That's part of the consideration of the dollars that are available. And we also have another food pantry in the asset process, and that's the Salvation Army.
Right.
That the Salvation Army doesn't ask the county specifically for funding, but they do receive funding from the city and United Way. And so there's that balancing of looking at requests from both agencies for similar kinds of services and then what the volunteers feel can be recommended based on the dollars available in that particular panel.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. And so a couple of important things here. I believe that we as a community, and I include Story County government in this, recognize the importance of our food pantries. And if we get into a tough situation, I think the community is going to respond really, really well. But what's important to underscore here is overall funding went up by about just over 8% for asset-funded agencies. And so when you start increasing an agency, if you're only going up 8% overall, you start increasing different agencies 20 and 30%, you're cutting into what happens everywhere else if you've only got 8% to work with. Okay?
Right. Yeah, I do it.
Yep.
And conversely, there were some services where agencies asked for either flat funding or a reduction in funding.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think it's really solid. A couple things I would note is Story County continues to increase our commitment to asset, especially when you combine Story County's direct commitment with our what is now an indirect commitment through CICS, which is the mental health region. Those used to be dollars that flowed directly from the county to the asset process. Now they flow through CICS. So we're about $1.5 million. Where Story County is now, if you add both of those together, that is substantially up. Deb, I can't do it off the top of my head, but over the last 6 or 7 years, it's way up on what the county's committed. I think we recognize, both previous boards and this board, recognize the importance of this, recognize that it's an outstanding process that we have here that combined brings the funders all to one table and gets a hard look at this. And I'm really, really happy and appreciative with the work that the volunteers at Asset did. Yeah.
I have a question that actually I picked up as I was prepping for tomorrow morning Board of Supervisors workshop about our expenditures for countywide and lost money. And I noted that the YSS's GRIP mentoring program was in a line item on our regular budget as opposed to going through the asset process. And it's in our, at least our budget packet, it shows YSS GRIP mentoring $16,000, and it's not in an asset.
Is that part of the change that we made 2 years ago with what was flowing through JCS?
Yes.
You want to talk about that, or you want me to try to?
I'll start.
Okay.
So historically, there were a set of services provided by Youth and Shelter Services that didn't go through the asset process. And so they went through juvenile court services. But it was county funding that was supporting those services. And fiscal year 17 is the first fiscal year that we streamlined that and pulled that out of juvenile court's budget at juvenile court's request and put it into the asset process.
But this one part we didn't put in the asset process, and the reason, as I recall, that we didn't put in the asset process is there is not a great mechanism to fund this particular service through asset, and we wanted to hold YSS harmless. So it had been basically a block grant where we, county, had given money to juvenile court services. Juvenile court services had block granted, not fee for service, but block granted those dollars to YSS. And the fear was, I want to say it was about $100,000 that was going from the county to JCS to YSS. And what we wanted to do when JCS asked that we take that out of their budget, they didn't want to be the middleman. We had a meeting with YSS, and as I recall, this was right about the transition between George and Andrew.
Yes.
We had a meeting with YSS, and our commitment to them was for the next few years, as I recall, to hold them harmless, make sure they're not losing revenue that they're counting on. We couldn't find a mechanism to get, I thought it was two components, into the asset process and get it funded. And so we held on to those more in a block grant method to evaluate as we go down the road. But that's how it ended up where it is.
But there are GRIP mentoring services in the asset process.
See, that's why I'm confused.
Yeah. This was simply a mechanism to make sure that YSS was going to be able to rely on the funding that they had traditionally relied upon as we move to this new system.
Yes, stay as whole as possible.
Okay, how many years is the expectation before?
I recall three, but we'll have to go back and review.
Right.
The fear was as they made their transition, and I don't mean to speak for George and Andrew, but I remember both of them being here, as they made the transition from one to the other, that any funding like that would get pulled out from under YSS in the middle of transition. And let's just go back. Deb, I'll ask that you go back and review. I want to say it was 3 years that we said we're going to hold you harmless, and then we've got to figure this out, how we're going to fund it long term.
Right. And I'll touch base, because again, Shirley Faircloth with Juvenile Court Services is the one who spearheaded the meetings with YSS in the county and trying to move as many services as possible into the asset process. And there are, in juvenile courts, categorizes them a little bit differently, so it was just kind of a matter of figuring out apples to apples as we were moving some of these things over. A big one in the budget right now is substance abuse prevention and awareness. So that used to sit with juvenile court services. That was one that got moved over. So we will, the intent is to eventually move all of those services over, but to do it in a phased-in approach so that YSS feels comfortable and we can bring it in then under the asset volunteers and they understand what's expected with those dollars. And to date, nothing has been cut.
In moving it from juvenile court services, did YSS have to bid for it on an RFP-type basis?
No, this went back to 1979, I think George said, where there was a court order. A judge had ordered the county to provide dollars funneled through juvenile court to provide a certain set of services.
Okay.
And that's where it sat up until fiscal year 17.
I understand, but when those services were under juvenile court services, did they issue an RFP for those services?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
So what it sounds to me like, Deb, is, and this is completely appropriate, that we would ask YSS, JCS to come in, and let's talk this all the way through now that we have two of three board members are different than when this was originally discussed. And move through that. If it comes up, Loris, you and Marty are going to have to decide how you're going to handle it in tomorrow's budget. It'll have to be a sooner conversation rather than later if we're talking about for this year's budget. If we're talking about on an ongoing basis, we could hold this out and do it later this spring.
Right. Yeah, I'm thinking ongoing, you know, a more ongoing basis on that. Just to clarify it, because we are, as we change our relationships with various agencies that are receiving funding through asset or various nonprofits, we want to make sure that we're providing service, but we don't have all these separate contracts out there or separate arrangements that end up creating conflict within the groups themselves, maybe. So, okay.
Yeah, and I think that's 100% right, and I think that was actually the intent of what we're talking about doing here is moving everything into one process rather than multiple processes and just trying to get there.
Right.
Anything else with asset? So I would take a motion if either of you are willing to approve the recommendations that have come forward from asset.
I would move that we approve the recommendations coming forward from the asset and once again thank the volunteers for all their work.
Second.
Any further discussion?
None.
Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thanks, Deb.
All right. Thank you.
The next item is discussion consideration of revised HIPAA policies and procedures and recovery plans. And you got on here for 7-day review, but I don't recall us ever sending this through 7-day review.
I have on there to waive the 7-day
review. Waive 7-day review. Okay.
Yep. Okay. So what you see attached is our Story County HIPAA policies and procedures. It's a very lengthy document if you glance through it. This was actually adopted, revised and adopted June 9th of 2015 for Marty and Lynn Loris, and some of you may recall the governance board. We did go through the region to get these updated. They had those services, which was excellent, in my opinion, on updating these. It does take a HIPAA attorney to get these written. So what I did, most of you know, last June, Story County closed its case management program. So those were included in this initial policies and procedures that was adopted in June of 2015. So what we did is I worked with Deb Shildroth and Carla Webb, and then also had our IT director review just a few things when Carla updated the emergency mode operations page that she has. And we just removed anything that referred to the case management program. So those positions, and there were only maybe 17 or 18 case management notes that I had to remove. All the policies are still the same. Nothing has been changed as far as our procedures. So that's why I'm requesting, too, that the seven-day review be waived. And there's really no...
Yep. So no substantive changes?
Yep, and I did reach out to legal counsel. Okay. And they said that's up to the discretion of the board. They'd be comfortable since there was no change to the true change to the policies. We were just removing the case management program.
Super. Questions for Alyssa?
No, and I appreciate the fact that you, on an ongoing basis, are trying to keep us current and looking to refresh our policies because they become dated, and if they're not at current code, we could find ourselves in a bad place, so I would encourage you to continue doing so. So thank you.
Is that a motion, Marty?
I would make a motion to adopt the revised HIPAA policies and procedures and recovery plans with a waiver of the second reading, or seven-day review.
I would second.
Further discussion? Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. So seven-day review is waived, and our HIPAA policies and procedures are updated. Thanks. Next item is discussion consideration of Resolution 1772, Auburn Trail Voluntary Annexation. Jerry Moore.
Morning, Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. Okay, again, this is Resolution 1772. It's a voluntary annexation. It's an 80-20 annexation, which I'll explain in a little bit. They're calling this Auburn Trail. It was submitted to the City of Ames. It includes 82.69 total acres. The applicant is Hunziker Development. The property owner of the consenting portion of this is Urban and Margaret Hunziker Apartments, LLC. And it contains 68.19 acres. Property address is 4605 Hyde Avenue. And again, this is in the northern portion of the City of Ames. It's contiguous to the city's corporate limits. It's in Franklin Township, and it's currently in the unincorporated portion of the county. It's an 80-20, so 20% of the land area includes non-consenting properties, which is about 14.5 acres. Those property owners are Clayton Gregg, Julie Schreery, Roger and Lori Hamblin, Allison Enos, and Mark Taylor, Paul and Margot Enos, and again, they are the non-consenting property owners. This is located in the Ames Urban Fringe plan area. It's in the Urban Services, Urban Residential area, which is contiguous to the city limits, which these areas often are. According to the plan, these areas typically are supported for annexation. Development is encouraged and to be developed under city standards, provided that infrastructure can be extended to these areas. And in this case, there is city water along Hyde. Sanitary sewer is on the east side of the non-consenting properties. Some of those policies in the plan talk about how many units per acre are acceptable. For a traditional type village development, it talks about up to 8 units per acre. Can be anywhere from a little over 3 acres to 10 units per acre for conventional single family to medium density residential. It talks about annexation is required before the land can be developed. It talks about urban infrastructure and suburban standards, in this case the city standards. Requires land development agreements, which there is an agreement in place with the Hunziker property, and then talks about mitigating or meeting the environmental requirements such as stormwater, erosion control, in accordance with the state DNR, Iowa DNR, or city standards. Property is also located within a allowable growth area. There's several different growth areas designated in the city's land use plan. This is on the north area. Have a map to show you that too. So this brings us to the Code of Iowa. And again, under 80-20 rule for voluntary annexations, 80% of the land area is comprised of consenting property, and then up to 20% can be included of the area for non-consenting. And then these instances go to the State City Development Board, and it requires a 4/5 vote. We're into the aerial that shows you the location. Again, we're in this little notch out area. This is currently unincorporated Story County. The plan, though, eventually is to annex this area and then also the areas to the west of the current corporate limits. So this is part of a two-phase annexation process. The Hunziker parcel went through a division so as not to create like an island with the land to the north and then the parcel to the northeast. But again, this shows you the 68-acre parcel consenting, the four parcels to the east. Three of those have dwellings. Houses were built between 1968 and 1999. And again, that's 14 and a half acres. So adjacent land use, there's a little over 3-acre parcel to the north. There's a communication tower on that piece. Sturges, single-family dwelling on a 34-acre parcel. To the northeast is Hayden's Crossing. That's in the city, single-family homes. Rose Prairie, proposed development, which also includes this long rectangular piece where the communication tower is. Borg Myers, they actually own the 160 acres to the west, and then you've got the Ames Golf and Country Court Club to the northwest, and then the existing Bloomington Heights subdivision to the south, and then of course Ada Hayden watershed and recreational area to the east.
Gary, since you have that map up, could you go back just to help me understand here? Rose Prairie is already annexed, correct?
Well, this portion of it is.
Okay.
This is Rose Prairie, and then this segment is not yet, but
okay.
It's
and
under that ownership.
But then we go over to the right, and obviously Ada Hayden is annexed.
Right.
All right. And then up above Hayden's Crossing. So I guess I'm just trying to figure out this property, however, is not landlocked because part of the Hunziker part connects with Still County, with Sturgis. Is that how it works?
Yeah. Well, right now this is all
the Borg
Myers.
Unincorporated. And so, again, they created a 50-foot-wide division in the northeast portion and the northwest so that they wouldn't landlock. So it would still be unincorporated for now. But, again, the second phase of this is to include eventually the golf course, the right-of-way, and then additional land to the north.
So when if Borgmeyer ever comes into the city, it will force Sturgis to also make a decision. That's when it will become.
Interestingly enough, I was at the city council meeting, where this was discussed also, and that's why I'm asking about the map, is because they had a different look map as far as different colors or whatever, and I was really confused there. This is actually easier to see.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
Yep, no problem. This is from the Ames Planning and Housing Department that they made available. It shows you the Hunziker piece, which is the 68-acre consenting. Non-consenting areas, the cross-hatched. Again, there's four separate parcels, 14.5 acres. Landowner, Enos Taylor, Ennis, Greg Shrewry, and then the Hamblin property to the south. This is from the City of Ames Planning and Housing Department. This is their land use plan. So this shows you the north growth area. Again, there's several growth areas. Mm-hmm. This happens to be the north area. So everything that's this coral color is planned for annexation for growth and development. So
but it's currently unincorporated.
Unincorporated.
All right.
So this is the annexation area. This would be from the land use plan, or the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, excuse me. It shows you the urban residential designation. And again, those are areas that are contiguous to the corporate limits. Those are areas that are prime for annexation, for future development, you know, provided that services, utilities can be provided. And in this case, there is water, has been extended along Hyde. There is sanitary sewer on the backside, on the east side. And, of course, the road was further recently paved. So Hunsaker Development, they did sign an agreement with the city in 2013 to cover the infrastructure costs, to agree to annex, pay special assessments on paving. Some of their plans, again, they don't have anything conceptual. We always ask for that information. There's nothing that was provided, but they're considering single-family attached, single-family detached, townhomes, senior living. I've got apartments there. It's actually senior living housing. Zoning, they take it under an agricultural zoning, but the city staff anticipates it being zoned suburban residential, low density, up to suburban residential, medium density. We're into the site photos. This is north of the proposed annexation area. This is Hayden's Crossing. Again, they're constructing single-family homes. This is to the north of the annexation area, Sturgis property. Again, there's one single-family home on that 34-acre parcel. You're looking at the communication tower. That was on the 3-acre piece to the north. This is the Hunsaker piece. We're looking directly to the west. And looking to the southwest, this is, you can see the Bloomington Heights development in the city. Enos Taylor, this is the north parcel. Greg Shuri, Hamblin Properties. Hunsaker property, we're looking to the northwest. Bloomington Heights, again, this is to the south. This is looking to the south on Hyde. We're looking to the north on Hyde. A little different perspective. Aerial drawing shows you the consenting Hunsaker piece, and then again the non-consenting. City services, again, there's city water, sanitary sewer mains adjacent to the area. It also has Xenia Rural Water. The non-consenting property owners are not required to connect to the city water unless they want to do that. And then also they have on-site septic systems. They can continue with the use of those systems until such time they fail. And then under city standards, if the sewer main is within 200 feet of a dwelling, then there's a requirement that they connect to the city sewer. I'm told from the city staff that there's only one property that will affect.
Falls within the 200 feet.
Right, right. So as far as the process, the city had their consultation with the county January 4. State law requires the county to take action on the requested annexation within 30 days, that's why this is before you. The city's Planning and Zoning Commission on the 18th of January approved the request. It's going to go to the City Council February 14. City Development Board tentative schedule is March 8 for a hearing April 12th with final consideration on May 19. Story County development staff did send out notices. We received an email this morning from somebody who lives to the south on Eisenhower Court, who was in opposition. She's claiming that she lives within a few feet of a creek that drains into the Ada Hayden area. She mentions that she thinks that apartments are going to be built. I did have a conversation with city staff this morning. That's not what's being proposed, other than there may be senior housing. But not necessarily apartments and not for student housing. But then she also raises a concern about traffic along Hyde being dangerous for small children. But that's the only comment that we received with the notices that we sent. Points to consider with this request, again, it's voluntary annexation. It's located within the urban fringe plan. It's in the urban services, urban residential area. These are areas that are planned for annexation under future development under the city standards. It's also in the targeted growth area in the comp plan of the city, contiguous to the city's corporate limits. Hyde Avenue was recently paved to, you know, to address the existing and proposed improvements for this area. Again, there is city water and sewer. Non-consenting property owners, again, will have Xenia water. They're not required to connect unless they want to, and they can continue with their septic systems. So Resolution 1772 was prepared for the board for approval, and with that, I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Questions for Jared?
No, I think it got laid out very well. I think the City of Ames has spoken to it, I guess, if we find it in our lap.
So the reality is the market has determined that this area north of Ames, south of Gilbert, is far, it's not even close that this is the highest growth area that we see in Story County. And that creates some real growing pains, no question about it. I kind of chuckled when you talked about the work fear of increased traffic on Hyde. Absolutely. That's a completely reasonable concern. That is growing pains as we see this growing. But I think this Hunsicker property and the other properties coming in with it are drops in the bucket. As you look at what's happening out there and what's going to happen out there over the next few years, we're going to see more and more and more single-family homes and other things out in that area. So,
Jerry, this land had been farmland, right? Do you happen to know what its LISA score is?
I do not know.
Okay, just for in the audience. And
I would have imagined
how productive it is.
I would imagine that it's probably low, and a lot of times when properties, even though they're farmed, when they're close to an urban area,
okay,
they come back being very low.
Low, all right. And then the woman's concern about the Ada Hayden watershed, I share that concern with all of the growth going up there. It's sad that the city and fought so hard before to create that and now faces additional threats up there. But we really, in us doing this resolution, we don't have any true choice here from the standpoint of it's our Ames Urban Fringe Plan. It's an annexation, which means they get to annex. Mm-hmm. So,
and it becomes voluntary by the sheer size of the one parcel.
Right, and I do.
There's not 100% consenting.
And I guess my last one, because I did happen to be at the City of Ames one, just for my own edification, Hunsicker had offered to these four people at one point to not be part of the annexation, but the city staff said no. Do you know why, Jerry?
I think there was direction from the city council to include the non-consenting because, again, it's a part of the overall encompassing picture to remove that notch out and to include areas to the west of the current corporate limits. It's something that's been in the works. Well, the Ames Urban Fringe Plan is 2006. I think there's some amendments in 2010, 2011. So there's been a lot of discussion, a lot of thought and consideration into.
Yeah, so I didn't attend the city council meeting that you attended, and I haven't done the math on this, but I'll bet you that it is all based on figuring out how to handle the 80-20 with the next annexation. So the next annexation is Borgmeyer.
I think so.
Yeah. And figuring out how you can make it a voluntary annexation by getting to the 80%.
Right. Jerry, just to let you know, I was and sat through most of those meetings when the urban fringe was formed, and it took years. And the impetus for the urban fringe plan was all about the developers not having to go through one set of standards at the county and another set of standards at the city. That was the impetus for it. So, okay. And with that, I will go ahead and I'll move that we accept the resolution. You can hear the resignation in my voice.
So I get a reluctant motion to adopt Resolution 1772. Do I have a second?
You have a second.
Discussion from us. Okay, so before we vote, even though this is not a public hearing, if there's anybody in the audience that'd like to address this before the board votes, now's a great time. This is the only time. Yes, sir, come on up. You'll introduce yourself and just give us your thoughts before we vote.
Oh, just a quick question.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm Alan McCose, and I live just outside of town.
Yeah.
I was just curious, when cities annex property, how does that affect the tax base for the county? And if this keeps happening, is the county going to be working with less money to provide the same services? I don't imagine it costs the county much to service, you know, provide services in that area.
So the answer is, if nothing developed on that property, yes, the county would receive less. But if things develop, if there are single-family homes and other things, so the county's percentage, and I'm speaking real loosely here, Alan, county's percentage before it goes into a municipality is about 35-36% of the property taxes received come to the county. When it goes into a municipality, it's more like 22-23% that we receive, but the valuation generally goes way, way up when it goes in.
Okay.
So you get a smaller piece of the pie, but the pie gets a lot bigger as far as just dollars and cents.
Yeah, that was my question.
Anybody else want to?
No, it's a great question, and there's, the explanation.
It's the fear. If things don't develop, we would see fewer revenues. But the second things start to develop, the valuation goes up so high that we actually see increased revenues for the county.
And I also saw on the print or the screen there, it shows sometimes the reason for annexing is to have a better boundary or a that's really poor excuse to annex properties just to make the cities.
It's against the law. It's against state law to create what's called an island in the middle of a.
But it wouldn't have been an island in this instance.
Well,
so it's only an island instance. Okay.
Yeah.
That's the only way the law kicks in. Now, some cities, no question, try to make their boundaries make sense, and I happen to agree with you. If that's the only reason for annexation, I'm not a fan of it. This one looks to me like they're trying to bring in the Hunsicker property, and they want to bring these other four along because it works in the math. As long as it's 80% voluntary, it's called a voluntary annexation. So they can bring these four along that aren't overly enamored with the idea, and then down the road, when a 160-acre parcel comes in, they also have the ability to bring in the other 40 acres, but not a whole lot more than that. That's what I'm seeing is happening here.
All right, thank you.
Yes, sir. Anybody else wishing to address us on this? Okay, if there's nothing else from the board, Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Resolution 1772 is adopted. Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you.
Let's see. No agency reports, no departmental reports, no other reports. Public forum number two is an opportunity for members of the public to address items not on today's agenda. I've got one for sure wishing to address us. Roger, come on up, Roger, and wants to talk to us about roads, which if you're talking about gravel roads, they're awful right now. If we're talking about other roads, let's have the conversation.
I'm Roger Engstrom. I live on 210th Street and between 570th and 580th Avenue. And
okay.
I understand that either last week, I think it was last week, that you approved or encouraged the county to scarcify the ice off the road.
Yes.
Which they did. It went right down to the black soil and is holding water. It held water before, so that's not really the cause of it, but it's even lower now, and the water standing there, the water that's standing eventually goes down, and that's where the frost heaves will come in the spring, and we'll need our four-wheel drives more then than we do for snow. I have talked to the county engineer and the I don't remember the name of the road supervisor, and complained about this several years ago, and offered to ride with the operators in the in the road patrols, the maintainers, to bring the gravel back from the sides of the road and put it in the middle. If you see now, most of the gravel is right at the shoulder. The first time they move snow, it'll be in the ditch. I don't know how much gravel was hauled last year, but I know it was a lot. And the roads don't look like they have it on there now. It wouldn't take much to pull that gravel back to the center, raise that blade a little bit, and leave it in the center. But they do, and they were out on my road yesterday. They pull it to the center, and then they make the final pass down the center of the road and make it flat. And as soon as cars go on it, that loose gravel goes to the edge again. It's not... There's absolutely no crown on the north-south roads. The east-west roads are not too bad. A few years ago, between my farms, I took my blade behind the tractor when I was going back and forth, and I got a cease and desist order from the board of supervisors, from the county engineer, to stay the hell off the roads. But that's all it needs, and it's not rocket science. The other question about the other comment about the road operators, at least the one that I see, is that he drives, no matter which direction he comes from, he drives one direction empty. I mean, with the blade up. My son said maybe he's setting a GPS. I know they have GPS on the machines, mm-hmm. and the supervisor can tell if the operator is blading,
yep.
or if he's just driving. Mm-hmm. Whether that's enforced or not, I have no idea. But I don't know. I don't understand why he drives 1 mile, then puts the blade down at the opposite side, comes back and back, ends up at the opposite end again, brings the blade up and goes 2 miles down, and comes back again empty. I mean, with the blade up. So I don't understand what the reason is for that. And I would suggest that they go to the library and get Moving the Earth. It's a book by Caterpillar, 1948. It's about 2.5 inches thick. They don't have to read the whole thing, but just the part on how to maintain a road. And it's very simple, very easy, but it takes a little bit of understanding. The other thing is, if they have the GPS on there, they need to look behind the blade, and when they see black dirt, raise it up a little bit and leave that gravel on the road. I'm a little concerned. I'm not the only one, but my sure. neighbors are the same way. And I would appreciate if you would drive some of those roads today or tomorrow. Uh-huh. It'll get your cars messed up, but you'll see my point. And I don't think there's any reason for spending that much money on gravel and on maintenance when the maintenance is part of the problem.
No question, it's frustrating to buy gravel and then see it end up in the ditch, and figuring out how to not have that happen is important to us. Roger, if I could, yeah, I would ask, as Laura, as long as you're okay with this, I would ask that Marty, as our gravel road resident among the three of us, that Marty, you and Deb work with Darren. Just talk through what Roger's talking about.
Oh, I tell you what, I'm sitting here just holding back, interrupting him because he was saying it so well, because I live on 210th Street up by 610th. You know, I'm just straight east
yeah.
of you,
yeah.
and I know what you say when you talk about those frost boils, and it just galls me to no end. Old Story County to Old Story County, the fact that they took the crowns off the road for no reason, you know, and they call it progress, it's not. Yeah. And I always marvel, being the old FedEx guy, when I sit there and see in our county that we have people that blade it down to the point you turn up black dirt. All you have done is taken out the foundation of that road.
That's right.
You encourage nature to put a problem in there, and then we do, you know, mitigate it to the best that we can, and it is a frustration of living out in the county. Roger's, he was telling my story, and I have seen it for years, and I appreciate
that. Well, so here's the beauty.
There.
The beauty is you're not the FedEx driver anymore. You're now the county supervisor, and so you get to weigh in on how we go forward with this. But all I would ask is I would like you and Deb to visit with Darren about why we're doing what we do, what the rationale is, and just talk through, is there a better – I'm a huge fan of always looking at, is there a better way to do something? And so – let's just clearly
not
you share Roger's comments. Let's just dig in and see what
Roger,
we can figure
out. Roger, I promise to drive by your house today. Grabbing on gravel is not a big deal.
The east-west roads are pretty good because they still have a crown on it. He does the same system, but because there was a high crown to start with, they don't have it all the way down yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I appreciate your listening to this.
Well, thank you for coming today.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm sure my neighbors do too, the ones I spoke to. Thank you.
Yes, they do.
Thank you. Outstanding. Anybody else wishing to address us on any topic today? Okay. That's it for public forum number two. Liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Loris.
Okay. Well, maybe if I can call my computer back.
All right. Well, Marty.
Oh, Marty.
Marty, we have had a rec center meeting here with Story County Hospital. That will have another follow-up meeting this coming week, and we will be moving towards quite likely get a firm configuration, though, of what it the proposal will be going forward. But that might change a little bit by the subsequent meeting I had prior to this meeting today, because I got to facilitate a meeting between the Ames and Story County Boys and Girls Club that drew in the City of Nevada and Story County Hospital, because this Story County Hospital completes the second phase and they move towards the south campus. They open up some space on the north campus, and Erica Peterson, the director of Ames Boys and Girls Club, is being displaced from Nevada schools, and so the timing could not have been better. And I think that the rec committee is looking to possibly go into a confederation partnership with the Ames Boys and Girls Club, which they had not otherwise considered. That said, we have had, I got the Colo City Council to schedule up a meeting. No, they did. They had the meeting anyway. I asked them to put on their meeting agenda on, I think it's Feb 6, the discussion for their council to talk about the possible inclusion of the Story or the Hickory Grove septic routing to their lagoon, so it would save us the expense, and it's a poor plan B of doing a larger lagoon at the Hickory Grove park. So we will be attempting to find some kind of common ground where we can serve ourselves, and we hope to have some success there.
Outstanding. Thank you, Marty. Of course.
Okay, last Wednesday and Thursday, Marty and I went to New Official School down in Des Moines, and we learned about everything from tax revenue to ethics to secondary roads. Very broad overview. Definitely, I thought, worth the time and worth about the $175 each that it cost for us to go. Okay. We won't talk about what happened on Friday. We'll let you talk about Friday.
Okay.
I went to the meeting at the full Ames Assessors. We will have the full Ames Assessors Conference Board tonight at City Hall for that discussion. Reminder that the Board of Supervisors budget work session is 9 a.m. tomorrow. I have a HRTA board meeting Thursday morning in Urbandale at 9 a.m. I'll be back as soon as possible for the E-911 overview out at the Justice Center. Just to remind everybody, the Ames Assessor Conference Board, the Board of Supervisors work session, the HRTA meeting, and then I also am at Community and Family Resources on Thursday night. It's in Webster City, but they are all open to the public. Also, I'm meeting with the safety and the wellness committees for the first time. So I'm excited about this week.
Going hard, absolutely. Okay, so for me, emergency management met last week and said its proposed budget for this year. So reminder to everybody, that is the mayors of each municipality in Story County, one board of supervisor member, and the sheriff of Story County makes up the emergency management commission. Things are really, really running smoothly there. We're fortunate to have both Keith and Melissa as leadership, the full-time leadership for emergency management. But that budget is set, and we'll see that as part of our county's overall budget. Gave the State of the Community on Friday, and I thought there was outstanding participation. It was hosted by the League of Women Voters and the Ames Chamber of Commerce. I think we had 75 plus people in attendance, and it really, I commented at one point, I think we had every political perspective from Richard all the way to Dean Hunsicker. I mean, we covered the entire gamut and everything in between. And most exciting is it's a demonstration of how involved this community is in the direction that we head. And so I really, really appreciate that. From my perspective, sitting on my side of the table, given the presentation along with five others, I thought it went really, really well. I hope the people that were there thought it was beneficial.
Oh, it was.
Met with City of Nevada leadership, mayor, their city manager, and their roads and maintenance people yesterday, along with Darren Moon, just to talk through, as Darren presented to us last Tuesday, Nevada is the only municipality in Story County that we don't have a roads agreement with, and so we've now moved down the road of getting that agreement, dealing with a couple of the issues that we learned about last week, and so expect to see more coming out of that. League of Women Voters host their second legislative wake-up this week, and it's in Nevada this week. So Saturday morning over at the Nevada City Council Chambers at 9 a.m. Will be an opportunity to hear how things are going down in Des Moines and how that might impact us. Here, you mentioned February 6th, you'll be in Colo. I'll be in Gilbert talking about funding for the bike trail that's going to go along the west side of 590th Grant, Gretton, Hyde, whatever, depending on where you're standing, whatever you want to call it. And that is all I have. Anything else for us today? Any other announcements?
None.
If not, I'd take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And we are adjourned. Thanks, everybody.